All right. I will call to order this meeting of the Customer Service Committee. Roll call, please.
Chair Reddick.
Here.
Director Banks. Director Dodson.
Here.
Chair Wolf.
Here.
Chair, we have a call.
Thank you very much. The next item of business is listed as public comment. I have been provided with no indications that there is any public comment. Very efficient. Moving on. Under the committee chair's item, first item we have is approval of the minutes of the Customer Service Committee meeting from...
I think the secretary may need to correct for you.
We've got a couple of corrections before I submit this. Of May 16, I would offer these up with the correction that the date on the first page be May 16, 2013, as compared to 2012. And then moving to the last page, page 5, that the first line reflect that the motion for approval of business systems item 1 was made by Director Towns, seconded by Committee Chair Reddick. I would look for a motion to approve those minutes with those amendments. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion, other changes, deletions, or proposals? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes as amended, signify by saying aye. All those opposed? Those are approved. Excellent. I have no other items under committee chair report, so moving on, executive director.
Thank you very much. I am going to be very brief and really introduce Shauna Whitehead to start with the presentation and guide us through the discussion today. We wanted to talk about a couple of different things. I believe our violations framework, providing an update, and I think we're going to maybe take some action for the 30-day notices, assuming that we can come to consensus around that. This was implementation of a longer notice cycle that we had discussed several meetings ago. Will allow for our customers to maybe make it through several pay periods or have time to come home from vacations, for instance, to deal with tollway notices. It's some feedback that we've gotten that maybe our notice cycle was a little too short. And also some analysis of the two-year look back. We're going to talk a little bit, I think, about our fleet policies today. Indiana toll concession fee, as you know, this has been kind of a topic, an ongoing topic, so we wanted to update you on some research and findings we've had there, and then talk a little bit about an IPAS customer survey. So, and some expanded settlement guidelines, I think, are going to kick off the discussion. So I will let Shauna take us through all those points, and I know as always, feel free to have a pretty informal discussion here and interrupt with any questions as they come up.
Yes, please do. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hello.
I'm going to make sure the clicker works, and it seems like I'll be able to use it.
Good.
I think Christy just kind of took us through the key topics today, and the next slide is really just a reminder of kind of what we've been talking about all the way along and how we've been crossing things off of our list and continue to. We wanted to start with a discussion of the settlement guidelines, which are things that have come up. This has come up over the course of the year, over and over again in this committee, and I think even in the broader industry discussions. This has to do with the fact that there are a couple of areas that our settlement guidelines don't at present cover that we've wanted to try to cover, if at all possible, as a group. One of them is bankruptcy settlements. Right now, when people are in bankruptcy, there has been, and I might have to ask, of course, for David to chime in, there have been questions about whether or not if the bankruptcy settlement exceeds the IPAS settlement that the settlement guidelines offer, which one could be accepted. And I believe that the trustee in the bankruptcy still has to be involved in that decision, but this would at least allow us the capacity to say, we'll accept an IPAS settlement. We're not going to hold you to the bankruptcy settlement. Does that sound?
This is a, directors, this is a somewhat perverse situation where a creditor in a debtor's bankruptcy would say, we see that the court has established unsecured creditors, which is what the tollway is by virtue of our violation, is to receive, let's say hypothetically, 20 cents on the dollar. based on this debtor's circumstances. And that would mean the tollway, the utility bill, the such and such is going to receive 20% of the amount of the debt that's on file with the bankruptcy court. And the tollway would say, all that being considered, we're okay if this debtor only pays us 5 cents or 10 cents, something less than the amount that is going to other creditors. And the bankruptcy court obviously has strong objection, as would other creditors, if the tollway was somehow trying to achieve a greater settlement than all other unsecured creditors. So that's why I say this is somewhat perverse, where a creditor is voluntarily saying we might accept less. So long as the trustee, which is essentially the court-appointed person to watch over an individual's or a corporation's bankruptcy, as sort of the court-appointed designee, usually a lawyer, as long as the trustee sort of gives us assurances that that's fine, the tollway and the tollway legal department is fine if we were to accept something less, but it always is good practice to keep it transparent to the court so that all other creditors can see what's going on. Is that fair or raising any questions?
No, and I just, based on our discussion, I just want to make sure that it's understood that this isn't some further reduction in what we would normally accept. This is going along with what the normal practices are, and in this particular case, we find that there's another obstacle, probably for the people that perhaps need that relief more than anybody else, given these other financial circumstances, that we've found to be kind of a hindrance. And oddly enough, this is probably providing more protection to them than it actually is to us.
That's exactly right.
I guess as we move forward, and Sean, I don't mean to interrupt, but it was kind of turned over, you know, Director Dodson, and forgive me, I was remiss, and I probably should have, you know, welcomed you to the committee. I know we talked about this earlier and talked about some of these issues and just kind of where we are, but I think that what we're looking at here in these settlement guidelines really reflects kind of a common sense acceptance of things that generally would make sense, and now we're just putting it into the guidelines, sure, so that we can actually move forward with these things. But I just wanted to point that out. Sean, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I appreciate that, and I feel very comforted by a better legal explanation than what I thought I might be able to provide. So that's perfect. And that is one of the updates to the settlement guidelines that we've talked about before that we would like to make. The next one has to do with government organizations. Right now, we have about 900 government organizations that have government IPAS accounts. And in the past, these government IPAS accounts, and when I mean the past, I mean before these settlement guidelines were formalized, they have paid on their violations simply the cash rate of the tolls. When the settlement guidelines went into place, the idea is that they would pay what everybody else paid, which is kind of on that settlement table. What we have discovered, confirmed since that time, is that a number of government organizations aren't able to. It's not so much about the money. There are two other obstacles. One is these government organizations have very long time frames for dealing with their mail and their invoicing. So their violations are coming from us on a regular basis, and it's taking them forever to get them to all the right subunits that then go ahead and say, yes, this was us, that then get them back to the billing department, et cetera. There's almost no way to win, and they get buried before they can even begin to get out. The other obstacle that we have faced is that some of these government organizations, and these are at all levels of government, actually are not permitted to pay fines. They can only pay for the service that they obtained, so they can only pay for the tolls. So if they're not allowed to pay for the fines, then we're all stuck at an impasse where we can't close out the debt. They continue to get buried, and really nobody wins. So the idea is that this would be a chance for everyone to try to set clean slates where possible in these government accounts. It doesn't mean all governments. It means if you have a government IPAS account.
And this would, from a business standpoint, allow us to actually collect on some of these outstanding monies that would actually be a cash positive move from our position.
That's what I believe.
We're protecting them from themselves.
I'd be able to think of it that way.
Okay. Makes sense.
So those are the two items, and we would have to formally have a resolution to update these settlement guidelines and take that to board.
Some of you may recall, and it happened, I think, when I first started at the tollway, that there was a desire by some board members that we actually publish and have settlement guidelines. There was, whether it was reality or not, the perception might have been that people could call in, and depending on who you spoke to or if you knew someone at the tollway or what have you, maybe you'd get a different settlement than somebody else working through the process. So what we've tried to do is streamline the process, but also create, you know, some common practices, so all of these things don't have to be escalated within the organization to be resolved, but we've given some framework to how they're resolved so that there can be some consistency in how we deal with similar types of cases.
And I think, too, that one of the things that has been long discussed in this committee is the fact that, you know, our focus needs to be on maintaining and developing relationships with these customers, and I think this is a good step. A lot of the things that we've been talking about and doing over the course of the last year and a half get us closer to that, really understanding the fact that this is a customer-based relationship and that we want to be able to move past this. And sometimes the policies that we had in place seemed to almost hinder us being able to move forward. I think that these proposals, and we talked about these in grander scheme. We've kind of vetted different areas in which we wanted to go, and I think these make the most sense after we took a look at what issues we really had at reviewing, you know, the violations that were on the books, the situations that we saw, and then, you know, clearing it through legal what we could and couldn't do. I think this is a good approach. Chair Wolf?
Yes, and I'm sorry I missed the last two meetings. The 900 governments under your umbrella being customer-friendly will feel how about this change?
I think a number of them will feel relieved and
because
they will
they
start
with
working with us
to
pay.
And will there be some that will not feel relieved?
There will always be some that continue to dig in their heels a little bit. Sometimes just because there are circumstances on their side that prevent payment, or fast payment, I should say.
But I think, you know, as this policy goes forward, what this is really requiring is simply that there was that they pay for the use that they've already enjoyed on the tollway, the ones that everybody else had. We're doing away with the fine that has been an impediment to them being able to move forward, which has constantly been an issue, a recurring issue that they've had to deal with. I think Sean is probably right, but I don't think you ever get 100% satisfaction in time. Probably there are some that just think it should be wiped off the books. In fairness to all of our other customers that comply, I think this is probably the... I'm confident that this is the best policy moving forward that allows us to actually get past that hurdle.
Chair, just a quick question on the even the normal fines that they owe, you're still going to incur a slow process just as a based on their systems of how they pay. So moving forward, even if you say, okay, we'll settle this, just pay us what you owe, it's still the red tape, the process of getting that money will still be a problem.
Their calls typically come much later than a family might call. A family with a couple of cars will get and process their mail much faster and call us and work with us to close out the debt. These organizations, you're right, the calls come later.
Because of the way things may be routed through their process.
Correct.
The bill goes to one department,
exactly.
That department doesn't really pay the bill, so they send the bill on to someone else, and it ends up in a stack, and then that's just the way government works.
Despite waiving the fines, you still have to deal with that.
Right. But at least this will allow us to work with them to close out.
Sean, do you want to just comment at this juncture about your vision of how an IPAS enters into this equation with governmental entities? We may not have touched on that, for the record.
The government organizations are IPAS customers, and there are two types of IPAS accounts they can have. One type of IPAS account is called an exempt account, and that is that means they're law enforcement or an emergency vehicle, and by law, they when we send them an invoice every quarter, they can send us back a written statement saying these were for business purposes, law enforcement emergency purposes, and then we don't charge the tolls. However, it's all documented, all the transactions they've had. The other government account is, again, an IPAS account, but like this exempt one, they get an invoice. They're not prepaying it. again, because governments typically are not allowed to prepay the same way. They have to get an invoice and they have to cut checks and whatnot. So they do get invoiced, and we do it every quarter for the transactions they've incurred. Most of them do, though, to your point, they do update their plates on their account. They do have transponders. They have big fleets. They're, you know, the government accounts aren't as well managed as, again, a family with two cars. but they are customers that do their best to be IFAS, you know, compliant.
So at least get out of jail free card.
All right. There's no other questions on that or comments?
So this resolution or change to the settlement guidelines is the resolution later in the agenda, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Agreed?
Yeah, I think so. Okay, I'm looking at Rob to make sure set up like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so then...
It's under business systems.
Too. Perfect. So then the next piece having to do with violations is a topic that we discussed probably about 5 months ago at this point, and it was about days to pay. This is just a little reminder of kind of where the Illinois Tollway stands against some of our peer organizations. By peer organizations, we mean tolling organizations that have a large number of open road electronic transactions or all electronic transactions. And you can see that our days to pay are pretty slim. We give people 21 days on the first notice, 14 days on the second, and 21 then on the third. And on the next slide, this is what we see on our website. And you can look at it on your computers. I know nobody could really see that. But on our website, we break down each of these notices, and we say how many days there are to pay and what the fines are that are attached to those. When we went through the analysis a few months ago, what we had decided was that that one of the things we could do for our customers and probably do for ourselves is give everybody a little more time. Give them more time to get their mail. Give them more time to open their mail. Give them more time to get another paycheck before they make a payment. Whatever it might be, just give them more time. It will delay our revenue kind of on a one-time basis, but it will not eliminate anything that we, you know, currently are expecting. And it will give everybody a chance to avoid the escalation of fines, and it will give us a chance perhaps to reduce our own costs in mailing additional notices or spending more time on the phone with them than we might otherwise. We have been working on the technology to make this update, but the one last thing that we need to do is to actually do a resolution on the JCAR language. The Joint Committee on Administrative Rules has to update their own language around the time frames so that we're allowed to do this.
So this is an arm of the General Assembly, the legislature, and they make, you know, once it, you know, laws can be passed, but then agencies or entities will write up rules that put a little bit more specificity around, you know, what can be fairly generally defined in the law. So, my
perfect.
Thank you. I've been doing that perfectly today, apparently, from people, so I appreciate that very much. It's my day to buy a lottery ticket. So, this is just kind of the last step, and if we can get your approval on this resolution, we do need board authorization or board approval on the resolution before we can advance it with JCAR.
It's probably important to note for Director Dotson, first couple times around the track here, typical track record is that we will get back from JCAR exactly as proposed, but there can be tweaks made at the legislative level, and I think John was going to flag one item that they returned it almost exactly, but it came back with a little tweak, and we'll see an example of that later with our pilot $50 issue.
Correct.
You know, one of the other things that I think is significant is As we make this change, I think Shauna touched on this a little bit, but the current cycle, the amount of time and effort and materials that we put into issuing these notices on these short terms will actually decrease the number of notices and costs that we incur, which is significant if you take a look at when we generally receive payment compliance. This is actually, you know, from a business standpoint, if for no other, this makes sense. I think if there's some consistency, in the way that we handle this, and I think it brings us more in line with other agencies in the way that they handle it. And generally, I think we're more in line with what people generally deal with in the private sector as far as collection cycles. And we've talked about this for a while. I think that this is a good move to that end. It's been as a committee have talked about this, and I think that's kind of been the directive we've given to staff to move towards this, and they've done this analysis to help guide us in that. And so I will be supporting this and you know, look forward to hopefully the committee and board moving forward in the same direction.
I think it's a great customer service move. I guess my question on the proposal, Shauna, is it would it be 30 days standardized for the first, second, and third?
For each of those three,
for
yes.
Each of three. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's honestly an easier thing to remember.
Sure.
I mean, most people don't have to remember it. They don't violate over and over again and don't have to deal with it over and over again, but it's still an easier message. I thought about it last night when I went to my mailbox to collect mail for the first time in 5 days. I thought, wow, if I have a violation sitting there, this will...
Right, the clock would have really been ticking.
But of course you would never have. I would never have a violation. I am a stellar IPAS account holder. Which I am. All right. The next item has a discussion that we've been wanting to have for a while as an organization. I believe Director Reddick asked us to put together an analysis on this. And the idea is to talk through what it would mean to change our two-year look-back. So the two-year look-back is a rule that means we do not send a violation notice until there is a third violation within 2 years. And that two-year time frame is one that causes a few times a year someone to escalate to our executive team or even to the press saying, I don't understand why I have a violation that's a couple years old in this notice. And this was originally put into place because when we opened open road tolling, we were the first ones to do it at any sort of volume like this. And the idea was, well, we give people a chance to make a couple of mistakes in a year, and it would, of course, kind of feed into our mail, our print and mail costs as well. Since that time, we've learned that most people really violate in 3+ incidents, and we have also learned that customers really don't like and also don't really understand the two-year rule. So the thought is, well, if we were to change it, what are our options for changing it? So there are two tables here. The first one would assume that you would still have to have 3 violations to get a notice. That's the first table. The second table assumes that you'd only have to have 2 violations to get a notice. And on the left side, you can see what our goals are, which are improving the customer experience, maintaining our net revenue recovery, and kind of accommodating our notice volumes. These all, when we say accommodate notice volumes, it really speaks to, that's the cost part more than anything else. And that's absorbed in somewhat the net revenue, but it helps everyone understand that it results in different numbers of notices going out. So then you can see it divided. Do we look back 2 years? Do we look back 1 year? Do we look back 6 months? And those, what we see here, are kind of what we would expect in net revenue recovery, meaning after costs, what we would get back based on our data, if we tried each of these different combinations. These are projections. None of this would be possible until the new back office system were in place. And again, the net revenue recovery does reflect, you know, rises in costs, but also increased recovery in different scenarios. Now, this is a tough one. This is pretty meaty.
It is, and you know, this is... I do think, you know, when you're explaining 2 years look back, and Chair Wolf always uses this as kind of her parameter, when you're at a cocktail party and you're explaining this to someone.
Don't try.
Unless you've had a lot to drink. Or they have.
Going back and explaining that you allow 2 years of accumulation or 2 years prior to putting anything together. That's okay, until they're the ones that have received the notice in their mailbox and they're going back, you know, 21 months to when this starts to kick. And it's like when you're...
It just seems like we're late instead of we've done them a favor or service.
You know, I have a teenager and he will do something, leave the house, come back later in the evening, and if I'm trying to reprimand him from something he did before, it's like he has no clue what the heck he was doing before he left the house. It's a little bit like that. I mean, because so we've seen that to be a problem, and really from the issue of dealing with customer service perspective. You know, how do we deal with these customers? And so taking a look at whether or not we're in line or out of line, and this, based on our review, it has kind of been out of line with what other similar tolling agencies are doing. So what we have before us on this page number 9, this slide number 9, whatever it is really kind of all of the options that are before us. Number one, is the 3 violations too much? Is it enough? Is it appropriate? Should we drop that down to sending out a notice after 2? The theory has always been if, you know, people just make mistakes. And if you can rectify it within that time period, you know, we're good to go. So then, if you take a look at these numbers, and an important one for us has to be that net recovery number. We have to be conscientious of the fact that whatever we do, whatever decision, whether we maintain the status quo, whether we propose a change, what impact is that going to have on our ability to operate? And so, as we take a look at this from kind of our perspective of how, what do we think is the best way to deal with customers, you know, I would pay particular attention, I guess that's that middle line on the net recovery. If we drop it down to 2 violations, obviously there's a positive on our net recovery. The question then put, I think that this committee and we need to talk about is that what we want to do in our policy? I mean, that's a pretty significant change. We go to 1 year look back and we drop off the number of violations before we come after you. You know, I'm not sure from the perspective of dealing with our customers if that's a pretty aggressive move. And so based on that, I would tend to, just my own personal preference, looking at the 1 year at 3 violations number, but you know, I would be interested in other input on that.
As we did on slide 6, did we survey other entities to see what the sort of norm, or is there not a norm of people all over the bar?
In the world of these open road tolling, all electronic transactions, it's much more common to send a notice at least every month or every quarter. But all of the organizations out there are constantly adjusting. Denver and Dallas particularly come to mind as ones that are constantly adjusting, trying to figure out what the right balance for them is. But we have a lot of data, and we feel relatively confident that this reflects what our experience would be if we made some adjustments.
So I'm sorry, I wasn't asking about the yield. I was asking about whether there's a industry practice or whether there's a sense that, I don't know what to call it, fairness. I mean, you started out by saying we did this initially because it was a new deal and people were trying to figure it out,
right,
and we gave them 2 years. But is there sort of a standard expectation that, you know, the people who really want to pay only make a mistake twice in a year, and so we really, that should be the latitude that you give people. I'm making up for it.
Right. In the industry, most organizations are not giving the type of latitude that we still give. That was something that we've been trying out. They do not give kind of the forgiveness in the two, for those two.
Mm-hmm.
The industry standard, though, is to send a notice much more frequently. So even if you get 1 or 2 within a month or a quarter, you'll get a notice. Where we'll only send it to you if you have 3 in 2 years.
Yep.
So somebody who makes 2 trips to Illinois in 2 years and makes the same mistake each time, they'll get a notice often the second time.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of our, I think that a lot of our violations, didn't we find in this process that a lot of it is somebody who accrues a large string of violations all in one
correct.
Trip. They That's drive the through the system majority. Or drive on the road, and it's really almost one right after the other within a 1 hour period of time. Maybe they don't have an account, or they've let a credit card expire, or they didn't put a new plate on it, or whatever the case may be.
Right? That's the vast majority.
So it's a smaller percentage that actually use this 2-year look back, but it is confusing to people. And I think when we did our focus groups, did we not? I seem to recall, you know, we talked about customer confusion, but I also seem to recall that there weren't necessarily a lot of customers who knew that it was a 2-year look back. They thought it was some period of time, and you could get a certain number over some period. But I didn't think that there was a large kind of penetration of that knowledge in our customer base when we did our focus groups.
So of course, none of them had actually been violators.
No, it was always somebody else in their household that, that was using their car unbeknownst to them.
It was always the in-law. What's our success rate been like with that group, with that particular group, in terms of recovery?
In terms of recouping
those fines.
So you're talking about the people who, in one trip, make a whole bunch of mistakes because they just don't know what they're doing.
Just because they have something.
We'd have to look to see that particular group, but our net recovery, we end up netting about 1% loss, correct?
Mm-hmm.
From all of our recovery efforts. Right. So that's pretty good relative to the rest of the industry.
And most people pay on time.
Right.
No, that we spend a lot of time talking about violations because I think that, you know, it's upsetting to the customer community to receive them. I get it. But most people do pay on time.
I'd be curious, a number, I know you have your footnote at the bottom about the cost rises, notice volume rise. So if you look, roughly about 700,000 is the difference between the notices and either year. I'd be curious, I wonder what that number is, a way to quantify that in terms of
what the costs are.
What the costs would actually be.
It's in that net number. Do you have the detail behind that net recovery? Because the net recovery number takes into account
that
the increased cost.
It does.
It takes into account.
What we project, at least, will be the increased cost or relative cost of sending more or less notices, receiving fewer or more calls.
Right. I do have the spreadsheet with all of its detail in multiple tabs.
I'd just be curious to see that.
To look at it.
Okay.
And Shauna, you're being a wonderful manager, neutral administrator, but do you have a preference on this? What do you think makes sense from having looked at this?
I personally hate explaining the 2-year rule. I think it's very difficult. From just the operations perspective, I think we could manage any of it. We're managing 2 it right now. I think we could manage others too. I think it's a customer question more than anything.
And I think the customer question is really, at what point do they just feel like we're behind and they didn't get alerted to something?
And it's our fault.
And it's our fault versus us doing them a service. And from that perspective, I would say you're in the 1 year to 6 month range on this, maybe even a little bit closer to 6 months, that they won't feel that they're being taken advantage of or somehow the wool was pulled over their eyes. But I think 1 year certainly better than our current. So,
and it's always something to be visited.
Right.
And you let the 3 or the 2 violations?
The 3 or the 2, again, I think we could manage to either. There is a part of me that always likes a slow ramp up. I think operationally it's nicer to manage, but I do think that all of these would be possible, especially.
So that's not an answer.
I know, it's not a great answer, but it's an opinion. My opinion is.
Well, your opinion is that we can do anything that they want us to do.
Shauna, the one thing that I find interesting on this is from the 1 year to 6 months, we actually drop the notice volumes. And is that because there would be a notice that goes out earlier, we believe that there'd be compliance and more people would come into compliance early, or less people come in violation because it's
usually
a shorter period of time.
Usually, they would violate again. once they
get... would be alerted through the notice that there was something wrong with their account, or they'd forgotten to add that license plate, or whatever, so there's some small percentage there that...
that would fix the problem faster.
So, from an operational standpoint, after I threw out that, you know, I think the 1 year would generally be appropriate, I mean, it's actually less taxing on our system, dropping it down to 6 months, based on that theory that we believe they would come into compliance earlier in the process. Am I right? Well, do I understand this properly?
I think so, okay. Yeah.
That's our projection.
It's our projection, exactly. Exactly. We'll have to monitor. Whatever we do choose, we'll have to monitor.
Do we have the ability to get any type of feedback from the customer? Can we get like a sample survey size of a pool of customers who may have a preference one way or the other?
For 6 months versus 1 year.
Well, when you say something, you hate explaining the 2 year. Or, you know, to Cheryl's point about explaining it to the general public, is there a way to kind of get any feedback in terms of preference or how it...
We could survey it, I suppose, or do focus groups on it or something.
We did have it as an official focus group question a couple of years ago, to Christy's earlier point, and we certainly could survey. We do surveys of our IPAS customers all the time online, and we have a decent response rate.
What would the survey question be? I'm just trying to think that we could think about that, but you know, nobody likes to receive violations, period, right?
Sure.
There are people who don't think that they should be getting them at all, so, but we can figure out. It's not something that could be implemented right away anyway, so there's certainly time to test.
To Director Reddick's point, if you're thinking about it from a customer perspective, there are 100,000 fewer people that are bothered with a violation notice if you do it every 6 months, right? Am I understanding that correctly? Or is that... But is it the number of people or is it the number of notices? So you might have... It might not be 100,000 people. It might be the same 100,000 people who are getting the third notice.
Correct. Well, it might be the same 50,000 people that are generating 100,000 notices. Might be a smaller number of people.
But the point is it's not fewer people who are getting notices.
Common sense would say that, and I know that's dangerous, but if you've got a longer period of time that you're using the same number of violations, I mean, it gives people more time, but to Christy's point, we find that most of them, you know, when they're flying up and down 294, they consistently, you know, so they get to that number earlier. So,
Is it worth it for us, just taking a step back from this? This is very specific, obviously. And one of the beautiful things about our new system, first of all, none of this is going to be implemented until we have our new toll collection system, which won't be for another year and a half, right? Approximately. So we just don't have the ability to do it within our current system. If we did, it would cost us hundreds of thousands of dollars of investment in a system that, frankly, we're not going to be using as much or anymore come, you know, a year and a half from now. It sounds like what I'm certainly hearing is the theme here is that we want something that, you know, maintains the existing net revenue recovery, maybe even enhances it, but certainly we don't want it to fall off a cliff. We're cognizant of that. And if there's one of these or whatever the scenario would be that helps to change customer behavior so that fewer customers are negatively impacted by getting violation notices that we ultimately often back out anyway because they're IPAS customers or something else, then that's something that sounds like it's important too, right? We're hoping to get a good customer service outcome out of this.
Right.
And was there any other themes here that you would identify that as we look at this? Because ultimately when we implement it, we could start at 6 months, see how it goes, but the new system would allow us to change that much more easily than our current system. So we could change it to 3 months, we could change it to a year, you know, we could move to see how the market moves or how our customer moves once we have the new system up and running. Any other kind of theme or something that we should be thinking about achieving.
I don't know if your second one includes this, but ultimately, how do you drive down the number of violators? I mean, I